Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, one of your hosts for today, together with Susan Franson.
Hello, and thank you for listening in.
During today's show, we give a nod to Mother Nature in the form of poetry as we all begin to feel spring in the air. If you don't know the Bird of Mouth Project, we look forward to introducing you. You'll enjoy it. Today, we'll also celebrate our good fortune and aims to be able to hear live classical music from international orchestras, at this time specifically the Ukrainian Symphony Orchestra, who will perform here tomorrow night. We also have a report on developments at the Ames School Board regarding the issue of racial disparities that are coming to light.
So let's get started. Here's the week's weather prediction with Elwin Taylor, brought to you by KHOI correspondent Vaughn Kettleson.
Well, certainly enjoyed some comparatively mild temperatures here this past weekend. Talking this morning with ISU Extension climatologist Dr. Elwin Taylor. And Elwin, does this signal maybe a turnaround toward springtime here that we've been having lately temperature-wise?
Well, I think at least it's a return to springtime-like conditions, but it won't last the whole week. We do have a chance of snow later in the week. In the meantime, over this past weekend, we had a good flow of air all the way from the Gulf of Mexico, bringing pleasant air into the Midwest. The people have been looking at the El Nino, saying, is it going to give us an El Nino year? It looks like it could, but it isn't spreading out to be one of those worldwide things just yet. We do have a couple of storm possibilities coming across from the Rocky Mountains. They've had a bit of a stormy weekend out there. And yes, we do have, as we get into, tomorrow there's a slight chance of snow here and there in Iowa. And again, there is a chance later in the week. So a couple of chances as fronts come down from up in Canada, and the 6 to 10 day outlook says about normal temperatures, colder than usual up toward Canada and warmer than usual down toward Arizona to Texas. Well, nobody will complain about that. It's right that Arizona should be warmer than we are and Canada should be cooler. And they're a little bit on the extreme in that way for the next week or two. But that leaves us about normal. And I think it's a favorable outlook, especially now that the frost is out of the soils and for the most part of the state, and flowers are beginning to show up in lawns. We hope that the freeze stays away enough that those early flowers can make it and introduce spring in an appropriate way.
ISU Extension climatologist Dr. Elwin Taylor joining us here this Monday. I'm Vaughn Kettleson.
As always, thank you, Elwin and Vaughn. Jennifer Knox is an internationally published poet and professor at Iowa State University. Good to have you with us on Local Talk, Jennifer.
Thank you for having us.
You are the creator of the poetry project Bird of Mouth.
I am.
And I know you, and also we have Tyler Harms here with us, and we'll hear from him later. He's the, you're the Young Birders, yeah, Iowa Young Birders?
That's correct, executive director of Iowa Young Birders.
Okay. Thank you. Well, I know you have an exciting program prepared for us today, but first, please give us a brief description of the project and its purpose.
Iowa Bird of Mouth is a community online crowdsourced poetry project, and what that means is the website lives online, and anyone can contribute a verse of any style. You can write one word. You can write a haiku. You can write a sonnet. You can write a memory. Any style at all, and whatever you're inspired to contribute. You can leave your name on the list, or you could do it anonymously. You can do it as a group, or you can do it as one person. And we've had about 200 submissions from people all over the world. We've had everyone from school children. We've had a brownie troop. We've had a middle school class in Alaska. And we've had National Book Award nominees. And we've had Guggenheim Fellows. And the vastness of the differences between our contributors is very exciting. So you see all sorts of words and all sorts of inspiration in the poems. We have 12 poems, one for a different wild bird each month. We began with the goldfinch in August, then the ring-necked pheasant in October, the crow, the eastern screech owl, the eagle in January, and we've just finished the northern cardinal, and we've moved on now for March to the red-winged blackbird.
Now, I guess the why of those birds is Tyler's department.
It is.
So maybe you could say a little bit about why in general, and then particularly why cardinals and red-winged blackbirds.
Sure. So, and I've mentioned this to Jennifer several times, how challenging it was for me to pick a bird for every month. But what we tried to do was pick birds that were representative of Iowa, so birds that we were seeing in Iowa frequently, and also representing the time of year, the specific time of year. So, for example, American goldfinch in September, they're the state bird of Iowa, so very fitting for our state. And they also start nesting in September. They're a very late nesting songbird, and so that was very timely for the goldfinch. For the northern cardinal, the month of February, they're our first songbird to start singing in the early part of the year, and most cardinals start singing in February, although this year we were hearing cardinals in late January due to the mild temperatures we've been experiencing this winter. And the cardinal, to me at least, it's just one of those really pleasant sightings on the Iowa landscape, particularly in the wintertime when we often have snow and everything's pretty dull. The cardinal offers a little bit of vibrance to our landscape.
Well, I've heard a lot of people say they haven't seen many cardinals this year.
Sure, and that's likely due to, again, the unseasonably warm temperatures we've been having this very mild winter. I don't know that cardinal populations are necessarily in decline this winter, but because we haven't had much snow cover this winter, we're not seeing as many cardinals or even many other common feeder birds at our bird feeders because there's a ample natural food sources available out there.
Okay, so what about the red-winged blackbird? I'm seeing a lot of those when I take walks.
Me too.
Yes, and the red-winged blackbird is probably one of my favorite birds, although I like all birds, so I don't know if that really does it justice. But the red-winged blackbird is the bird that I often think of as the, and I think many do, as the bird that really sings in spring. They arrive in mid to late March, and they begin singing on territory, and they're just a very welcome sighting and kind of a sign of spring.
Well, that's interesting that this is one of your favorite birds, because when Jennifer was describing this morning, she said that the next bird was the red-winged blackbird, the bullies of the bird world.
Sure, and I can't say that I disagree with that. They are a very aggressive bird. There's no doubt about that, much like many of the blackbirds. And oftentimes, if you ever see a hawk or another large bird flying away from the roadsides and see a little tiny blackbird above it, dive bombing it and harassing it, it's most likely a red-winged blackbird that's doing that. So.
Very brave.
Yeah, I was thinking to bully a predator is different from bullying the little birds.
Yes, they are very brave indeed.
Well, I think we must have some poems that involve these birds. What were some of the best cardinal poems we had this year?
We had so many beautiful cardinal poems. What struck me was that this is obviously a very important bird in so many people's hearts. For some, it represents love and loss and people that they know, and for others, just the dynamicness of its personality. This is a very beloved bird, especially around here.
Yeah.
So here are some poems. Once I saw the red flash in the trees, I knew that I could survive the Midwest. Though the rains pounded and the blizzards howled and the clouds darkened, still, outside in the trees was a song that cheered my heart and strengthened my resolve to go on.
Oh, that's
isn't that pretty?
Lovely one.
And this, it took me a while to figure out what this was. It's a some consonants and a whole lot of vowels, but then I got it. It's pew, 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 gyip, 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 which is the cardinal call, a cardinal call. And this is a very fun one. Around here, you're not just an itty dinosaur. You're a bit of lore that the local community rallies around. Everyone has these crisp images of you blazoned on baseball hats and sweatpants. Everyone seems to say, "Hey, you, red birds are the absolute bomb." And who would argue with that? Bluebirds? But who cares about bluebirds? Only in those communities where the bluebird is the local totem. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about you, Northern Cardinal. You've got this striking vest of red, and as far as I know, whatever else you've got, that vest is the best. Who's got the best vest? You do. Who looks like a red pupil in the white eye of winter? You do. Who questions the world with feathers? Who could sit on my head like a flaming fist?
That's
fun.
That's great.
Yes, it sure is.
That's really great.
And the funnest part of this project is waking up in the morning or checking in on the website and seeing these things. It's like somebody has planted flowers around your house in the middle of the night. It's just terrific. And a complete surprise. Everyone is a complete surprise.
And actually, now the way the crowdsourcing works, other people could have that experience, couldn't they?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. When they check back into the poem, something new is there that they haven't seen before. And it's especially fun when you see verses that have obviously been written as a group because you hear so many different voices that it is like a flock of birds all sort of speaking at once.
Yes, and they're crowdsourced, so they're there for
they're there.
The world.
And this text is open sourced, so visual artists can use it, musicians can use it. Other writers can use it. We hope that the DNR finds a good use for it, and I hope that it will live on in other forms.
And you also have quite a bit of photography. I noticed that when I checked back on your website, the goldfinch, for example, there are a whole bunch of pictures that I don't remember from earlier.
Yeah. We also have a wonderful young Ames High School artist. Her name is Polyphony Bruna, and she has been recreating all the birds in paintings and drawings with just terrific artist statements about why she's chosen the medium she has. She's very thoughtful and technically very savvy. So we have we're lucky to have somebody who is, with as much love as people are putting into the poems, she is putting them into these drawings and paintings that again, they're open source, and you can use them any way you would like. Very generous
Jennifer,
of her.
Jennifer, give the website.
It is iowabirdofmouth.com.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, we'll have it on our website. But that's an easy one to remember.
Good. I'm glad.
Do you have any more cardinal poems?
No more cardinal, but I do have a couple of red-winged blackbird poems. This is the first one that somebody wrote. Isn't there a red-winged blackbird in every poem? Waiting, a blob of paint, weighing the gray reeds down, then fluffing up its scarlet epaulets. Welcome to the gun show. Kapow!
And this, I didn't know you could shoot songbirds.
I think it's I think the blackbird is kapow.
Oh, the bird is the gun.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the red-winged blackbird's at the gun show, you know. This one was in the Crow poem, and because I can go back and look at who submits if they decide to leave their name, this is written by a local poet named Steve King, who's done a lot of work with the arts and a lot of writing in this area, and this has both the Crow and red-winged blackbirds in it. Crow. Three crows flew head on a broad-tail hawk east of Albert Lea, black beaks talking trash, then driven into the hawk's gray back. One flies point while the other two harass from the wings. You've seen this in Korea. Three MiGs shooting down our bomber, or coyotes on a sick cow. 2 hours later, across the Iowa border, a new pecking order. Two red-winged blackbirds, clever as card players, harassing a passing crow. The crow's wings, lumbering like sails on a dinghy, drag against the current, while the blackbird sharks slice the breeze into splinters. The crow tries a barrel roll to the blackbird's delight. Tufts of coal feathers flutter from his belly. A lone cedar offers comfort, and into its arms the crow falls. Black feathers, onyx beak, and talons sheathed in royal green. This crow, terrorist, target, stowaway, scavenger, and for a moment, on that rough branch, king. Pretty good, huh?
Yeah. But I see why you were calling the red-winged blackbirds the bullies of the bird world.
Mm-hmm. They're definitely in this poem, they are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you would like to see all of the birds featured by the Bird of Mouth Project and the poetry that has been submitted about them, their website is Iowa Bird of Mouth, as we just heard, or go to our website, khoifm.org, a little later for a link. You are now listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm one of your hosts, Susan Franzen, along with Ursula Rudenberg. We are speaking with Jennifer Knox and Tyler Harms. Jennifer is an internationally published poet, professor at Iowa State, and creator of the Bird of Mouth Project, an online poetry project celebrating some of the birds of Iowa. Tyler is the executive director of Iowa Young Birders, an organization that helps and encourages young Iowans to study, watch, and enjoy birds. Tyler, the red-winged blackbird is the bird of the month for March. Is there anything else that you would like to tell us about that to inspire poetry?
Certainly. So one of the other reasons that I selected the red-winged blackbird was because it is more of a bird that's representative of Iowa's wetlands. And so when we were thinking about determining which birds to select, we also wanted to select birds that were representative of the different habitats that we have in Iowa. And as many folks are probably well aware, we have many wetlands in Iowa, but many fewer wetlands than what we used to have. And so the red-winged blackbird is one of those birds that represents one of our rare habitats on the landscape, and that is prairie wetlands. And so when thinking about the red-winged blackbird, I would encourage writers to think about the wetlands as well.
Does that mean they're somewhat endangered?
Red-winged blackbirds are not endangered. They're quite common. Despite the fact that they represent some of our rare wetlands, they are one of those species that have adapted to utilize other habitats as well. And so they aren't endangered. They're doing quite well in Iowa and elsewhere. But still very, I think, a nice symbol of Iowa's wetlands.
Well, since we're now at the halfway mark in Iowa Bird of Mouth with the red-winged blackbird, I guess we've got 7 of the 12. Yes. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of poems to celebrate at this point. Could you give us some of the high points to sort of inspire people for the rest?
Absolutely. I've brought some from many of the poems. This is from the first poem, the Goldfinch poem. There were two that hung and hovered by the mud puddle and the musk thistle, flitting from one splintered fence post to another, bathing in the rainwater's glint like it was a mirror to some other universe where things were easier than the place I lived. I'd watch for them. The bright peacocking male, the low-watt female on each morning walk, days spent digging for some elusive answer to the question my curving figure made. Later, I learned that they were a symbol for resurrection. Of course they were. My two yellow-winged twins teaching me to feast on thorns and like it. Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
And this is quite a different tone. This is a haiku from the Goldfinch poem. Rob Lowe, Fell's Goldfinch, in charity golf tourney, quits the game for good. And that's a true story.
Apparently, mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes, mm-hmm. He accidentally killed a goldfinch. This is a beautiful little one from the ring-necked pheasant. two-dimensional splots hand-painted on a grandmama's dishware. Dishwater hands somewhere, brown and tiny, like the frizzy underfeathers that keep the bird warm, capable of holding such a noble pose long enough to be admired. This is another one from the pheasant. Call the males moose, the females buttercucks. Call them with whistles shaped like lips that imitate the bullies of their childhoods. They will never be free of the taunts and teasings. They will never be four season, free under the bubble. We received probably the most submissions from students, school students, young students, when the eagle was posted. So I would wake up in the morning and there would be lots of acrostics in the poem, which is very cute.
What is that?
It is when you have the word going down, so E-A-G-L-E, and then you make a word out of the E, word out of the A, word out of the G, and they were just so cute. So here's some of them. Eagle, bald, awesome, lively, denominators, ever so amazing, as chill as ice, glamorous, living to the fullest, eyesight of a telescope, survivors. And here's another. Eagles are eagles, not seagulls or beagles. They're big birds, not wig birds. They're cool birds, not pool birds. They're awesome like a flower. Bald eagles are brown. Bald eagles like to eat fish. Bald eagle power.
Wow. Awesome like a flower.
Yeah. Yeah. Very fun. And we have a few poems from the Eastern Screech Owl. I don't want to speak of you. I want to speak through you. See through your wordless eyes, opened to the light of math, time, and when you lock your talons, rhyme. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Here's another owl tendency. Who has put this egg on my pillow? I place it on my lips' cradle. Was it the vice-stricken owl? Her night call radiating in vinyl grooves, hatching my swollen orb head. I have angered the river by being lost and not knowing the trees' wild past. Maybe my face is an ear. Maybe my blood is thickening to milk. Maybe my tongue, a wing. Look now, it is that fermented owl. She claws open the river's back, plucks fish from the dream we have all dreamt. An egg, purling its yolk gold nectar on lobes of self and horned-headed self. So it is, as you can imagine, quite amazing to have these pop up. Some people put their names in the contributors list, some do not, but every day is just so much fun with this project, full of surprises.
And it can be fun for all our listeners if they want to join.
Yes, we hope you do.
Thanks to both Jennifer Knox, poet, and Tyler Harms of Young Birders for giving us new awareness to take away with us when we walk almost anywhere, especially in woods or around ponds, and especially around ponds this month. And to help us start celebrating the return of spring through our avian neighbors, let's let the red-winged blackbird have the last word.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm one of your hosts today, Ursula Rudenberg, here today with Susan Franson. Thank you for joining us to listen in. That was a song of the red-winged blackbird, who is back to help usher in spring. I've already seen a few, and they are welcome sight. I also hear the cardinal now when I get up. A cardinal is singing, which is also a welcome sound. And speaking of beautiful sounds, the National Symphony Orchestra of Ukraine will be performing tomorrow night at C.Y. Stevens Auditorium in Ames at 7:30. Peter Riley from IOFA, the group that makes it possible for us to hear so many distinguished orchestras, is here. Thank you for coming by, Peter.
It's a pleasure, as always.
So tell us about the National Symphony Orchestra of Ukraine.
It was originally founded in 1627.
It's old.
It's old. Well, it came and went. And it came in its present form in 1918, right after the end of the First World War, and it's been one of the great orchestras of Europe for 100 years.
Where are they located?
In Kiev, the capital of Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. So they've seen a lot of war as well as culture.
They've seen a lot of war. During World War II, they retreated east to stay away from the Germans, and they performed in the eastern part of Ukraine during the war.
And today, once again, they're in an area that has somewhat of a tenuous political situation.
It's tenuous. Mm-hmm. Eastern Europe is a tenuous place.
You've lived for a while in Europe, so you have a little bit of a sense of that.
Although, I've lived 2 years in Lausanne, uh-huh. Switzerland. I ran an exchange program there for 30 years. Uh-huh. I've run an exchange program in Glasgow in Scotland for 20 years. So in visiting them and going other places, I've been through a lot of Europe.
Tell us a little bit, what is IOFA?
IOFA is the Ames International Orchestra Festival Association. So we're a volunteer group. We have terms that go for 3 or 6 years. We advise the Iowa State Center in what orchestras to invite here. We also do fundraising. We do community involvement. We are a group that supports the center.
Uh-huh. So have you been around as long as the center has been?
I came here in 1974. Uh-huh. My wife and I met here. The center started when the C.Y. Stevens started in the late 60s. So we've been here almost from the beginning.
And was IOFA part of the beginning of the center?
It came together in the few years afterwards.
Mm-hmm. To help bring international orchestras.
Right. International mm-hmm. and domestic orchestras.
Mm-hmm. So who is the director of the Ukraine Symphony Orchestra?
The music director is Theodore Kuchar. He is an American, as it turns out, of Ukrainian background. He has been the director for some years now, for some large number of years.
So he's an American who lives in the Ukraine?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And is he the conductor as well?
There are a series of conductors. The title is music director, so he leads everything. But there are different conductors who conduct different concerts.
So he may or may not be conducting tomorrow night?
He's conducting tomorrow night.
He is.
Yes.
He is. And there's also a violin soloist?
There's a violin soloist. His name is Dima Kachenko.
Kachenko. I was wondering how you pronounce that word. I saw it on their website. Dima Kachenko, is he Ukrainian?
He's Ukrainian. The name uh-huh. is very specifically Ukrainian or Belarusian.
Uh-huh. Okay. Do you know anything about him?
No, I don't, except that he's played with them a great deal.
Uh-huh. I looked him up on YouTube. He doesn't look very old.
He's a fairly young guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now, can you describe a little bit when an orchestra like the Ukrainians comes to the United States? What exactly are they doing?
Well, they're making their name. That's the biggest uh-huh. thing. They're entertaining us, on the other hand. This is a very big tour. They're stopping at 44 places. We're the 35th. And they're going all the way from the south up through New England. They have one appearance in Toronto, and then they're coming to the Midwest and eventually going all the way to the West Coast. Their final appearances in Berkeley.
One of the things that I go to the international concerts with my father, and I have kind of a standing dates to go to these concerts, and I always notice that at the end you see before you go in Stevens, and when you come out you see the big bus behind the auditorium, and you realize these people are traveling in buses. They play a concert and then they have to get back on a bus.
They're seeing the whole country. They're coming here from Champaign, where they appear 2 days before, and they're going to Edmond, Oklahoma, 2 days afterwards, and then they're going back to Kansas City, and then they're hopscotching here and there. But in the end, it's a coast-to-coast tour. Some orchestras come for just a couple of weeks. They're coming for 2.5 months.
Wow. So they're seeing the country. They're doing a big road trip around the United States.
A complete road trip. It's not their first. They've been here before. They started coming to the West and to the United States right after the breakup of the Soviet Union in 1989.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been coming for the better part of 30 years now.
Well, can you tell us a little bit what they'll be performing tomorrow night?
They're performing three things. And the middle one is something that the IOFA really likes to see. It's a Ukrainian piece. It's the symphony, the Violin Concerto No. 2 by Stankovich. And it's preceded by the overture to La Forza del Destino by Verdi. And the second half of the program is the Symphony No. 6, The Pathetique by Tchaikovsky. So it's a really nice program.
It's somewhat of a somber program.
It is.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Which I guess is fitting for troubled times.
I would suppose so, yes.
We'll play a little bit of the Violin Concerto No. 2 in a few minutes, just to give a little bit of a sense of it. And in fact, it'll be Mr. Stankovich playing himself.
How nice.
So look forward to that. But before we do that, let's talk just a few minutes about IOFA, because that's kind of an institution in Ames. How do you actually select the orchestras that come here?
Well, there's a list. Mm-hmm. And the list is fairly widely disseminated. And the idea is to find out what orchestras are going to be in the United States, if they're foreign orchestras, at what times. And we like to have two orchestras a year, one of them a full orchestra, and this is a full orchestra. This is 100 people.
100 people.
100 people.
Wow.
So it's not just one bus.
Full stage.
It's several buses.
Yeah. Okay.
Plus all of the instruments, of course.
Right.
And so we like to have one in the fall, one in the spring, a full orchestra, and a chamber orchestra of maybe 20, 25 people.
Mm-hmm.
This is expensive. This costs a lot of money, and it's our job to fill the seats as much as possible and to negotiate through the center with orchestras which have their own representatives. So you get a list, and then the people in the IOFA, 12 to 15 of us, we advise the center on what orchestras we'd like to hear. When were they last here? Have they ever been here? How many people do we think we'll put in the seats if they come? Mm-hmm. So it's a fairly major activity that we go through.
Mm-hmm. It's a big investment in terms of bringing these people here, but it's really a big cultural initiative. I always am struck when I go to these concerts that it's more than a musical concert. Every time it ends up being kind of a moment of international diplomacy. The concert conductors tend to convey something personal about their culture, about who they are, and there's always a connection made with the audience, kind of across international boundaries, which gives the concert kind of a special feeling to them.
We're the only place in Iowa to bring in international orchestras. When you go to the concerts, you see banners.
Yes.
Of orchestras that have been here in the past. We've brought in nearly every major international orchestra in the world to Ames. Often we're the smallest place they go to. That's not true this time when they're going to 44 places.
Mm-hmm.
But often it's Chicago, Ames, New York.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's quite a combination.
It is.
And they are always guaranteed a standing ovation in Ames.
It seems so.
Ames loves to give standing ovations to the orchestras.
Yes. I always wondered about this.
It is always just a very personal moment. It's a beautiful aspect to this community. And sometimes the donors have a reception afterwards down below at Stevens. When the Russian orchestra came, they were all very young people in the orchestra. And the refreshments were gone instantly. So it occurred to me that these young people probably didn't have dinner before they performed.
They generally don't have dinner.
They were very hungry.
We do. IOFA does supply a spread of fruit and drinks and other things for them. But they generally don't eat heavily beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Because playing for 2 hours with a short break.
You have to be alert.
Mm-hmm. You have to be alert, and you have to be pretty, shall we say?
Hungry.
Hungry. Also, 2 hours of playing for many of the instruments is really quite a feat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're doing it.
Yeah.
This is hard work.
Very hard work, yes. Uh-huh. Well, any last words, any particular memories over the years that stand out for you?
Well, we've been going to concerts at Stevens now for 40 years. It's a wonderful building. These are wonderful events. The building, of course, is voted by the architects of Iowa as the Iowa Building of the 20th Century. It's a wonderful building. We put wonderful orchestras in there.
Yeah.
Do come tonight, tomorrow night.
Okay, and this is Local Talk. You've been hearing from Peter Riley, who's with IOFA, the group that makes it possible for so many great orchestras to come to perform here in Ames, really contributing to the quality of life we enjoy. Thank you for coming, Peter.
Well, thanks for having me.
The National Symphony Orchestra of Ukraine will be performing tomorrow night at C.Y. Stevens Auditorium at 7:30. The Iowa State Center actually underwrites Local Talk, and so right after this program, you will hear from them again, their website and where you can get tickets. And here is the National Symphony Orchestra of Ukraine with soloist, violinist, Dima Tchenko. And he's performing the Violin Concerto No. 2, which will be performed tomorrow night.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. That was a segment of the National Symphony Orchestra of Ukraine with violinist and soloist Dima Shchenko performing the Violin Concerto No. 2 by Yevhen Stankovich. They will perform that live in concert tomorrow night at C.B. Stevens Auditorium at 7:30. I am one of your hosts for today, Susan Branson, here with Ursula Rudenberg.
Last January, the Iowa School Board report cards came out, or the Iowa School report cards came out, and it was made public that Ames Middle School had a 36% achievement gap between African American students and white students, and a gap of 11% between Hispanic and white students. The school report cards showed that achievement gaps also exist at other schools in Ames, and attention to this detail has grown over the past few weeks, both in the local media and at school board meetings. The issue of academic disparity between minority and white students dominated the first hour of last Monday's Ames school board meeting. The school board changed their usual format, hearing presentations made by members of the community and representatives from several community groups led by Inclusive Ames, which is a citizen advocacy group. Here are some of the comments that were made to the school board last Monday.
I'm Annika Mandel. I'm a mom, an educator, and a member of the new youth and schools-focused action team of Inclusive Ames. We are a group that is passionate about social justice in education, but we do want to be clear that we do not have all the answers, and we also are not the first to raise these concerns. Longstanding groups such as the NAACP Ames Branch, AMIS, and other groups, as well as parents and grandparents, have really laid the groundwork and raised these questions, and we see them still as critical participants in these conversations. You know from our recent email that our group is concerned about existing racial disparities in the district on a number of different indicators: academic achievement, enrollment in gifted and talented programming, enrollment in advanced science and math courses, in and out of school suspension, and in other areas. While the Ames Middle School was in the press recently for its 36% proficiency gap between black and white students, the publicly available data that we have reviewed indicates that those disparities are, in fact, a challenge district-wide. As a result of the district-wide racial disparities, we are requesting an intentional district-wide response. We are heartened by the efforts of individuals, including teachers, building administrators, and others. At the same time, we believe the disparities will be best addressed if there is a concerted and coordinated response across schools and classrooms. So to this end, we respectfully suggest three actions. First, we ask critically that the district publicly and visibly acknowledge that significant racial and ethnic disparities do exist in Ames schools. One way would be to bring these up in an agenda item at the school board meeting or potentially in the school board resolution. Second, we ask that you engage in a public process of eliciting input from all stakeholders, including school personnel, students, parents, and community members of the various racial and ethnic groups. Finally, we ask that the district make closing the achievement gap and eliminating other racial disparities a priority. We suggest that your focus may include, but should not be limited to, ongoing professional development for staff, including implicit bias training, and reviewing and revamping disciplinary policies. We certainly welcome the dialogue that has begun with the district board members and administration, and we look forward to further discussions on ways that we, and again, importantly, our other allied groups and the broader community, can support a district-wide response. We know, as we hope you do, that tackling racial disparities is very complex, yet it is imperative that we not turn away. These inequities impact all learners, and they really impact all of us, regardless of our race and ethnicity.
My name is Edna Young Clinton. I serve as the president of the Ames NAACP branch. Our national organization has established five game changers, of which education is one for the 21st century. We continue to be dedicated to ensuring that all of our children receive a high-quality public education. In making my comments, I want to acknowledge that there are positive things happening in the Ames School District. However, we have not risen to the challenge of providing an educational environment where all students reach their potential. There is a need for the school board and the administrators to set the reduction of the number of African American and Latino students who underperform as a priority. Setting their needs as a priority speaks to what it means to be responsive to the needs of students who may not have your experiences, your access to resources, or your cultural identity. I am not hearing language that speaks to solutions that will assist these students in gaining the most from their in-school time and how the system will hold itself co-responsible for their improvements in their performance, which result in them being on par with their white cohorts. It is my hope that you will reach outside of the school's paid employees, the school board, and into the communities to individuals and other organizations to seek allies in the pursuit of better practices and aspirations that help all of us talk about the achievements of African American and Latino students with the same enthusiasm that we talk about white students. The need for action is urgent. And if you want to know how to help children that don't reflect you succeed, then go to the population that can help you.
My name is Thomas Andre. I participate in AMOS, the Mid-Iowa Organization Strategy, and members of the AMOS cohort have expressed the same concerns I'm going to express today. So I'm going to speak to discipline as opposed to achievement and disparities in the rates at which kids are disciplined in the AIM schools. And as you can see, the rates of involvement in suspension are much higher for African Americans and whites and Hispanics than they are for whites. So roughly, the chance of being suspended as a black child is 5 times as high as the chance of being suspended as a white child. So that simply expresses discrepancies that I think we all understood and knew about. We need to make a commitment in AIMS to reduce this issue, and I think the school board needs to make a commitment to keep it on its front agenda. That's what I'm asking you to do. AIMS worked with the Des Moines schools to develop a restorative justice program that's been shown to be effective in reducing kids dropping out of school and staying with their education. I think it's going to be a long-term effort to change the culture of the schools and provide more equitable opportunities. And I think the board needs to make a commitment to stay on this over some period of years to keep monitoring the issue and make sure that we are working to resolve this problem. You've got to involve all the stakeholders. You've got to do an assessment of what stakeholders' perceptions of the district are like.
Angela Shaw. I am sitting before you as one of those parents that is in that 36.2% difference. And let me give you a little bit of background about my daughter, who is now a freshman in Ames. We arrived here in fourth grade. My child was labeled as a gifted and talented student. She came from an exemplary status, 38 years straight, magnet school. On the Texas exams, she scored 2 to 3 grades higher in math, science, reading, and social studies. Fast forward, she has been in this school district now for 7 years, and she is struggling. Not fundamentals that she learned in Texas, but fundamentals she should have learned in Ames Middle School. You have failed, my child. I came here recruited for Iowa State. I am a microbiologist. I have a PhD. I value education. My family has invested thousands of dollars in tutors. Tutor at my house right now, working on math. So to hear the comments in the January meeting were beyond disturbing. This perception of me not caring as a parent, me not investing as a parent, shameful. Shameful. Talking about our community and not seeing diversity or the increase in diversity as beautiful. In addition to that, saying we raise our children different. And then the biggest thing that hurt me was the silence. The silence on each one of your, nothing came out of your mouth. So there's a lot of service going for today, but when those comments just rolled off the tongue, because I believe what's in your heart, you speak. there was silence. So I love the fact that you have action items. As a professor, I want to see milestones. I want to see what are your targets that you will be going towards. Because I have a preschooler now, and we're questioning whether we need to go to Gilbert or Ankeny. Because I don't trust Ames right now. I have a student who's struggling, and she came in exemplary status, gifted and talented. Why?
Those statements were made last Monday at the Ames School Board meeting. Angela Shaw, the last speaker we heard, was referring to comments made by Dr. Mandy Ross, Associate Superintendent of the Ames Community School District, at another recent school board meeting. In a videoed statement that was shown at the start of Monday's meeting, Dr. Ross apologized for her previous comments. As was mentioned before, the school board changed their format last Monday to hear citizen presentations led by Inclusive Ames, a citizen advocacy group which was asking the school board to recognize and address racial and ethnic disparities in Ames schools and seek input from diverse sources that are affected, including students and parents. It also was requesting that problems beyond academic achievement be addressed, including a revision of their disciplinary policies. Superintendent Tim Taylor and other board members opened the meeting by thanking Inclusive Ames for calling attention to these issues, and they pledged to form an action committee working with Inclusive Ames and other presenting groups to develop strategies to close racial and ethnic disparities. And we heard Angela Shaw refer to that in her presentation. This issue will likely stay in the news. And as she said, people are watching to see what happens next, and we'll keep you informed as well.
And you have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We have been your hosts for today, Ursula Rudenberg and Susan Franzen. You just heard from a number of Ames citizens at last Monday's school board meeting. Earlier this hour, Peter Riley with IOFA spoke about the National Symphony Orchestra of Ukraine, which will be performing tomorrow night at C.Y. Stevens Auditorium. And from Jennifer Knox of Bird of Mouth and Tyler Harms of Iowa Young Birders.
Local Talk was engineered by Cynthia McClure. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You also heard the National Symphony Orchestra of Ukraine performing the Violin Concerto No. 2 by Stankovich.
Local Talk airs at 7 a.m. noon and 7 p.m. You can find today's show online at khoifm.org on our homepage as soon as our webmaster Ron Carson is able to post it. Thank you, Ron. There you can also find a link to an archive of all KHOI programs after they have aired. KHOI streams live on line at khoifm.org as well. If you would like to join the local team as a reporter, please contact us at khoifm.org. We welcome your getting involved and we'll train you so you don't have to have prior experience to do it. Please remember that as listener, you are the most important part of KHOI. Your participation as audience and your generous donations help make it all possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Support for KHOI comes from Stevens Auditorium, presenting the award-winning National Symphony Orchestra of Ukraine. More information can be found at center.iastate.edu. Center.iastate.edu.